The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Everyone, you're kind of spaced out, so I will look at you and say, it's okay. If you want to, I mean, it's lovely if you come together. I think it's cozier, but I will respect if people want to stay in the back. That's totally fine. So, from the people who are here, for whom, who has heard, or let me see, for whom would it be the first time that they've heard a talk about restlessness and worry? First? So a few. The majority, I guess, have heard. So the ones who have heard a talk on restlessness and worry before, I hope that you will gain new insights. I find that this practice, you can hear certain teachings over and over again, and it works like this. You always come back, and hopefully at a higher level with greater understanding, right? So, and also it has a lot to do with the teacher, the personality of the teacher. Sometimes one teacher says it in a particular way, and it's suddenly, oh, yes, that resonates with me, that was clear for me, and so it's of benefit to hear it from different teachers, different times. So restlessness and worry, I would say that that's the most common affliction of what brings people to meditation, right? It's something that is very, very much part of our life. And some of you know that restlessness and worry is part of a list called the five hindrances. So the five hindrances, just briefly, are states that get in the way, that hinder our meditation. Now, which ones are they? And the first one is sensual desire. You know, is that anything that I want? Sensual desire. Second one is ill will or aversion. I don't want. You're sitting there, you don't like whatever's happening in your mind. You don't like that you have a knee pain, etc. The third one is sloth and torpor. That's a common one, right? We're sitting and we're just almost falling asleep. And then the fourth one is restlessness and worry. We're sitting there and we're feeling itchy, we want to jiggle, we want to get up, and the mind is racing. And the last one, the fifth one, is doubt. Oh, I don't know if this practice is right for me. I shouldn't have come today. And maybe if Andrea were here, it would be better. And, you know, and so constantly it's back and forth, you're not really sure what you want. One thing that I find interesting is that with each of these hindrances, there is an imbalance with the energy in your system, in your body. For example, with sloth and torpor, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're tired, but you are not able to access your energy. With restlessness and worry, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're feeling very energetic. There is a lot of energy, but it's erratic energy. Very uncomfortable energy. So one thing that I find also useful to look at is that the term in Pali for hindrance is nivarana, and it means to cover up. So in general, it's useful when we're looking at the hindrances to say, what's underneath? So when I'm feeling really restless and worried, we can look what's underneath that restlessness. Most of the time, I would say with restlessness and worry, what's underneath is fear. Fear that I'm not going to do well, that I'm not going to remember, that whatever, you know, it's fear, it's not going to be quite what we want. So restlessness and worry are considered as one hindrance because both of them have a lot of similarity and they get expressed in the mind and the body in similar ways. So let us look at how does restlessness and worry express itself mentally. So the mind can't settle. We might have one nagging thought that is repetitive and it just keeps coming back over and over and over again. There's something very fruitless about it, right? It just repeats itself, but it doesn't go really anywhere. Or we might have many thoughts that just keep going from one after the other. They usually move quickly. They usually are fragmented. There's not a whole lot of logic about them. And also often they are invisible to us. And that's a real problem because that's when we begin to establish restlessness and worry as a habit. If, you know, we let them be with us for long periods of time and we don't notice. So under restlessness and worry, it's very hard to get a task accomplished, right? Because our mind just doesn't focus. We can't concentrate. Now, physically, we feel very fidgety. You know, it's very hard to sit still. It can express itself with various tensions in the body, particularly the neck right here. You know, if you find yourself thinking a lot, most of the time we have this part of the back of the neck really tense and the shoulders. These tensions sometimes go so far as to turn into pain. And then, of course, what we want to do with our practice is to differentiate the pain from the reaction to the pain. So as I mentioned before, when we are feeling restless and worried, the energy is a very uncomfortable, fast-moving, erratic energy. It's very much the feeling of too much caffeine. Gill describes it as shakiness or agitated vulnerability. So agitated vulnerability. And what's interesting about this expression, agitated vulnerability, is that we become exactly what we're trying to avoid, right? When we're worried, we're trying to kind of keep things together and not to feel vulnerable, but exactly that agitation is what makes us feel this agitated vulnerability. The German teacher and nun Ayakema writes, "The mind's restlessness is expressed in the restlessness of the body. The body is the servant of the mind. It doesn't have authority on its own. The body without the mind is a corpse. Everything the body does is dictated by the mind, regardless if we are aware of it or not." So, an image that I like very much from the discourses is that of a skilled gatekeeper. So with this practice, we want to become a very skilled gatekeeper at the gates of the mind. So we're very aware constantly, while we're meditating or not, what presents itself to the gates of the mind. Do we want to let it in or not? In general, we can say that restlessness results from wanting to control everything. And worry is the fear that we might not get what we want. And of course, we want to control so that we get what we want, right? What gets very tricky is that although it's useful to find out what are the causes of restlessness. When we are restless, it's very hard to see what made us restless. So we need to have a bit, even a little bit of stillness or awareness in order to be able to discover what brought about this restlessness. Some of you might have heard this expression that Gill uses, that it is very useful to relax the thinking muscle. So it's kind of interesting to even express it this way, right? That the thinking is like a muscle. So when thoughts are going at a very fast rate, and we're able to relax a little bit, the rate of the thoughts are going to slow down. So one of the activities or the reasons that we hang on to restlessness and worry is that somehow some of us still think that there is a value to worrying. I remember when I was kind of like in my early 30s and I was living in LA and I really wanted to rent this little charming house, although quite a ramshackle. And there were lots of us who wanted the house. And the landlady told me that it was going to take a few days for her to make up her mind. When I look back the way I was behaving while I waited to hear the result, what the decision of the landlady, I realized that somewhere in there I believed that if I held myself leaning forward and kind of in this agitated state, oh, I hope I get it, keep your fingers crossed, yes, I'm going to get it, that somehow I was going to beam that energy to her and I was going to get the house. So somehow we have that belief in us. So it's an interesting question to see how would you respond if I told you, I can make you not worry or be restless ever again in your life. How would you feel? If there's a part of you that says, yeah, okay, great. If there's a part of you that says, well, wait a minute, I'm not so sure. Let me think about this. It's an interesting discovery to see, oh, okay, then for me, worrying or being restless has a value. I believe that it has a value. Like some of us, for example, mistake, confuse, worrying with love. Have you noticed how parents do that a lot? Like, oh, I worried so much for you, sweetie, where were you? And if we don't worry, we think that we're not loving. There's a young mom that in one of the groups I was teaching in East Palo Alto, and she looked at me and she said, no, I would consider it very disloyal if I didn't worry about my children and my family. Disloyal, she thought. So, it's interesting to discover that. I also like to look at our environment, and how it promotes restlessness. Everything around us is vying constantly for our attention. Tim Wu, author of Attention Merchants, writes, few moments or spaces of our day remain uncultivated by the attention merchants, contributing to the distracted, unfocused tenor of our times. So a distracted, fragmented, or unfocused mind is restless. And that restlessness is just a little step away from anxiety. It's very easy for that restlessness to flip over to anxiety. So a typical way to escape the uncomfortable feeling of distraction and restlessness is to get ourselves busy or distract ourselves. But we know that that just creates a vicious circle, right? So it's okay not to have entertainment every second of our waking hours. You know? We don't have to have the TV on or be using our devices. It's also interesting to look at speech and restlessness. When we are restless, the mind is not only distracted, but also easily excitable. This, in turn, gives way to provocative language. In a discourse, it is said that a source of restlessness can be the use of provocative words. So, can we each bring to mind a conversation, a discussion with an intimate partner in which we were so agitated that we really weren't listening at all what the other was saying? Our mind was racing, and we were like a verbal bulldozer. We interrupt. We only hear what our mind is screaming. I'm right, you're wrong. In this state, it's very easy to say words such as, you always are inconsiderate, or you never listen to me. So, needless to say, this type of discussion is very painful and doesn't lead anywhere. They leave us feeling isolated, tense, hurting, and full of ill will. So are we able to stop for a moment and experience the pain and discomfort of being agitated? Or possibly the hurt and shame of having to take in that a loved one who knows us very well is reflecting back an aspect we don't want to see. It really is kind of like, ouch, when we see that reflected in somebody whom we love and knows as well. So, in this state, we are unable to hear wisdom, and our mind is disposed to fault finding. So, what does mindfulness teach us for these moments? First, to recognize that we are in this state of restlessness, of agitation, of ill will, and then use the body for awareness, receive whatever is present, remain quiet, if at all possible, and give yourself some downtime. Give yourself some downtime to recalibrate. So Bhikkhu Analyu writes that restlessness can also arise through excessive striving. I got to be the best runner, I got to be the best programmer, the best mother, the best meditator. So this excessive striving is visually depicted in the discourses as a goldsmith who keeps blowing on the gold that is placed on a fire, and as a result, the gold gets burnt. So there's nothing wrong with having the desire to be the best that we are able, but if we bear down with force, jaws clenched, it will become a source of suffering. So it's interesting also to look at worry in relation to the past and the future. So when we worry, about the past. Classically, it's either regret or remorse, you know, something that was done or said that we regret. So how often is it for us that after a work meeting, we sit and we go over it in a worrisome way, over and over again? I should have said this, I should have done that. Or even after a social dinner. Oh, you know, that, and there we are. And we all can learn about something that could have gone better. But we need to differentiate between just calmly looking back and saying, oh, you know, there's room for improvement here or there, and the obsessive worrying that just agitates the mind. When many, many years ago, when I was still training to be a flutist and I was performing a lot, remember one time I performed and I was backstage with my teacher and I was going on and on and on about, oh, but I did this and I didn't, you know, and how about that? And she just looked at me and she said, Andrea, we already went about what are the things that can be improved. Now, let it go. The music is already in the past. And it's like, ah, okay. So I wasn't practicing at the time, but I remember there was like, oh yeah, the music is gone. It's gone, it's in the past. I don't have the power to change whatever people think about it. I would say the best medicine against worrying is an ethical life. Right? We live an ethical life and we don't need to worry. I got one of these, I forget if it was a phone call. Maybe some of you have gotten it, where that it said something like, we would just like to let you know that we are going to audit you on your taxes or something that I had done wrong. And the first response was, oh my gosh, worry. And then I thought, wait a minute. I haven't done anything wrong. They can look through my taxes all they want. And that was kind of a relief to know, oh, no, I've lived an ethical life. There's nothing I need to hide. It's okay. But imagine if this comes and we have done something that's not quite ethical. Oof. Then you're really in for suffering. So worry in relation to the future. There's a wonderful word for that, preoccupation. If you think about it, you know, the etymology of preoccupation, pre, before, occupatio means to occupy yourself. So you occupy yourself with something before it happens. So anxiety about the future, it helps to realize that there's always something we can worry about. No lack of reasons to worry. There's something at hand that you can worry about. Ayakema writes, worry afflicts many people. It agitates our mind. It takes away from the present moment, which is the only moment we can live. All moments given to worrying are lost moments. Are lost moments. So maybe some of you have heard this expression, being in the present is the best way to take care of the future. So how is that? If I'm truly in the present moment, I'm experiencing my reality completely, fully, deeply. And I have, therefore, a greater chance that in the future, I will do the same. And when I experience my life fully and deeply, I have access to wisdom. I really can have a lot more clarity. And I can, here's another interesting thing. When I experience things completely being aware, I will remember. Anytime we go doing something, saying something without any awareness, it will be forgotten. So what does that say about learning from our experience? If we are fully present as we go from moment to moment, I will remember, and therefore I will be able to access that experience, and I will be discerning, and wisdom grows that way. So now I want to share with you a poem by Goethe. This is my own translation. Don't come back to this circle again and always back again. Permit, oh, permit me be. Grant, oh, grant me happiness. Should I flee? Should I cease? Alas, doubting, that's enough. Won't you grant me happiness? Worry then, so make me wise. So, if worry is present, then why not, once it's there, why not learn something from it? So, if any of you thought, had a little bit of a, I'm not so sure that I would not want to worry ever again in my life, the one time that maybe worry can be, I would say the one time I can think of that it can be of use is if I transgressed, if I behaved in an unethical way, and I feel restless, worried afterwards, that's very useful. That's pointing me to something that went wrong. And I have the opportunity to look back, learn from it, and then let it go. And then really let it go, because then worry doesn't have any use anymore. So that's the one time that I would say worry can have a gift. But in reality, we don't have to even get to worry to learn from our mistakes. But once you find yourself worried, then do use it. Do ask yourself. So how do we practice with restlessness and worry? When we're feeling restlessness and worried, the last thing we want to do is meditate. It's very hard to sit and meditate. We just want to bolt and go off and do something. But it's exactly what we need most. Just very simply put, the more attention we put on the breath, the less attention and energy is going to go into the worrying. It's just that. You know, where do we put the attention? And wherever we put the attention, that's what we're strengthening. The other thing is we need to be very patient. It takes time to allow the mind to settle. So our environment naturally agitates our mind because there's so much stimulus. So if you know the image that we use a lot in this circle, so of a pond that you put a stick in it and you go and you stir up the dirt, you look at the pond, it takes a while, right, till all the particles of dirt float to the ground. It's the same thing with our mind. So give yourself some time. Sit and really keep checking in with your body. Like, is your body, has it softened? Has it settled? One of the big dangers about restlessness and worry is that it's very easy for it to become a habit or a default way of being. often there's really no cause for worry. But the mind is so accustomed to falling into that mode of being that it just automatically goes there. So obviously mindfulness is the key to breaking that cycle. You know, just being able to name it. Right now, I'm worried. That's already a huge step. It seems very obvious, but it is very important. So stop, breathe, check the stories you're telling yourself. If you can, write or speak to yourself in as few words as possible, what am I worried about? Because when you have to put words to it and you force yourself to be succinct, what happens is you break the spell of the ominous, vague feeling that is so characteristic of restlessness and worry. It's the vagueness that has the power, that really feeds the restlessness and the worry. It's that fog. An image that I've heard Gil use that I find very, very wonderful is when you're meditating and you feel very restless, imagine your body being very, very spacious. And the restlessness is like a ping pong ball that is bouncing in a big space. If it has a big space to bounce back and forth, eventually it comes to stop. Right? If there's a very narrow space, it just keeps bouncing. So just imagine yourself big, 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 spacious, and allow this ball with, you know, used humor and compassion, you know, okay, yes, I can sit here. Eventually this ball will stop. There's some imagery in the discourses to describe restlessness and worry. If you envision a bowl filled with water and strong wind blowing over the top of the bowl of water, so the surface gets very agitated. You bend over and you try to see yourself on the reflection of the water. Impossible. It's so agitated. Bhikkhu Anālya extends this image by pointing out that agitated water can spill over very easily. And just the same, our agitation and restlessness spills over to other people. So let's realize that we are all open nervous systems. We all catch the energy of the other. We're not closed loops. So if we are next to somebody who's restless and worried, it's very likely that we're also going to get restless and worried. But the opposite is also true. If we are able to be calm, equanimous, we give the gift to other people of the equanimity. People will gravitate towards you because they like feeding off your equanimity. Also, in the discourses, restlessness and worry is described as being, I should say, once we are freed from restlessness and worried, it is described as being freed from slavery. He says, however, if we're gripped by restlessness and worry, we are like a slave, and our mental freedom is at the mercy of the captor. As slaves, we are unable to take our life into our hands and act freely. So we want to learn also how to prevent restlessness and how to prevent it. You know, we each have to discover for ourselves what is it that brings restlessness and worry about for us. Just very common sense, diminish the sensory input. It's very straightforward. Bombard yourself with a lot of sensory input and you will be restless. And from restlessness, we go to worry easily. It's also very useful to cultivate contentment, give up incessantly wanting more. And so the antidotes, what are the antidotes for restlessness and worry? I would say, and in my own experience, the most powerful antidote is loving kindness. Loving kindness, if your whole being is suffused with loving kindness, restlessness and worry doesn't have a chance. Try it out for yourself. Try it out when you're not feeling restless and worried. Check what is it that's protecting you from restlessness and worry. So to finish, I want to read from the Dhammapada, a section that is called the mind. And really try to envision these images that the Dhammapada gives us that are so wonderful. The restless, agitated mind, hard to control, hard to protect. This sage makes straight as a fletcher the shaft of an arrow. Like a fish out of water, thrown on dry ground, the mind thrashes about, trying to escape Mara's command. The mind, hard to control, flighty, alighting where it wishes, one does well to tame. The disciplined mind brings happiness. So let's close our eyes for a few minutes. And you might want to consider, as you keep your eyes closed, just for yourself, how common is for me to be restless and worried? What are the most common causes for me to get restless and worried? How do I tend to act when I am under the influence of restlessness and worry? What beliefs do I have that justify being restless and worried? And we have a few minutes, so if anybody has a question, a comment. Yes, can you pass the microphone?
I think I was anxious, restless when you read the last part right before. So if you could read that excerpt again, that would be very kind.
Yes, from the Dhammapada.
I missed the whole thing.
You know something? First of all, I want to congratulate you. That's wonderful. This is exactly what our practice is all about. being genuine, being real with what is happening in the moment. And, you know, that happens to us a lot when we talk to people. And most people know, most people can tell you've spaced out. And people feel kind of a little let down. But if you say, just like this gentleman said, you know, I'm sorry, I spaced out. Could you say it again? It immediately brings back the connection. So I bow to you. I read it with great joy again. Dhammapada, the mind. The restless, agitated mind, hard to protect, hard to control. This sage makes straight as a fletcher the shaft of an arrow. Like a fish out of water, thrown on dry ground, the mind thrashes about, trying to escape Mara's command. The mind, hard to control, flighty, alighting where it wishes, one does well to tame. The disciplined mind brings happiness. We could all use it hearing it a second time. Anything else?
So I have a question.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things you talked about regarding restless and worry made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking that isn't there something like worrying too less, or maybe just like...
Worrying what?
Worrying not at all, like just completely...
I think I know where you're going. But
yeah, I think what happens is only when there is external pressure due to certain situation in our life, it causes some worry, and then only it initiates a certain action.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, I see where you're going.
So without the worry, we wouldn't be, you know, motivated enough to do certain things that we have to. Like,
that's,
you know,
that's a good point. So here's where we all have this confusion. We confuse worriness with being engaged. And we confuse not being worried with disassociation or being aloof. But it's not the same thing. I can be very calm, very present, very equanimous, and care a lot, and be very engaged in what's happening. In fact, I will be able to be more engaged if I can let go of the fear, of the worry, of all these emotions that make the mind agitated. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a balancing act.
Yeah.
You know, and I find for myself what's happening in our present situation, constantly having to practice really hard to be engaged, to care, but not to flip over into the and just get totally fearful and agitated and full of hate. But, you know, it's like, okay, what's the next step that I can take?
Yeah, like being more aware of the situations around you and kind of understanding that even without worrying, you can, like, you can take certain actions.
Yes.
With
yes, exactly.
With positive, mm-hmm. positive energy and thoughts.
Yeah. So possibly, you know, that we can exchange the word worry for having concern. Having concern for X. This is important. I will give it time and attention. And you're giving of yourself, but you're not paying the price of making your mind foggy and unsettled. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good evening. Mm-hmm.